Today's daf in Masechet Pesachim is daf Nun Aleph. However, I did send you out a brief review in written terms of the perek that we finished, which was Elu Ovrim, and I think we should just take a few moments because I think we've sort of lost track because of all of the interruptions. We've lost track of where it is that we were holding in Masechet Pesachim, so that after we did the initial prokim that dealt directly with the immediate issues of the concept of Tashbisu, of Bal Yira'eh, Bal Yimatzeh, of what the dinim of Biur are, what the zmanim of Biur are, and everything seemed quite clear, suddenly we got into this very confusing perek that if you don't see it in its full glory, it may be easy to miss what's going on over here. So we had finished up the main interrelationship of the way Chometz is used, or Pesach Bichlal, I should say, is used, because so many in Yonim of Achila and Pesach. Pesach itself is used as a model for all of the dinim of Yisuri Achila and Yisuri Hanos. So we literally went through Kol HaTorah Kula. We went through every single case where we would have a relationship of Hanah and Achila, including the cases where we specifically have a unique din that the Torah said not to make them equivalents and so on. We did all of that. We did the interrelationships of the overall dinim of the Torah, of Ta'arovus to the dinim of Chometz as well. So we even got into the important questions of the way in which things are mitztaref and so on. In this perek, we're moving a little bit away from that because we're going into situations where something is actually not fully present, whether the chometz or whether the iser is not fully present or whether the individual is not fully present. For instance, he's on the way to do a mitzvah, or he's outside of Yerushalayim, the latter part of the perek. But the not fully present is really the common denominator. So if we're talking about Chometz Nuksha, or we're talking about Chometz Betal Roves, or we're talking about something which is a Chatzi Shir, or we're talking about Hetem Itztarif Liyisr, or we're talking about only the Tam is present, but not the reality is present, which is Nogea, the difference between Kizayis Bechtei Achilles Pras versus simply the Te'ima. So all of those issues, including the very interesting relationship to not fully present, which is the concept of Erusin. Amazingly, that is also considered to be, you're married, but you're not married, or at least you better not be. So you're not fully present, so to speak, in that relationship. All of those issues are here in this perek, so that we look into the new chidushim of how do we know that there's a concept that actually expands the basic halacha of Achilas Chometz into something where either the Chometz or the person is not fully present. And that's interesting that the Torah remarkably gives us two psukim that if you don't learn how to read from a Gemara, that they sound very much the same and they end up being completely focused on different issues, even though they're using the same words. One is focused on the individual and the presence of the individual, and the other is focused on the object that you're eating. So we have the kol ochel machmetzet versus the kol machmetzet lo tochelu. One of them is the kol machmetzet, and the other one is kol ochel machmetzet. And from there, we sort of branched off into all of these amazing dinim of hetem itztarif liyisr, in which it's possible that something is there only partially, but we make the act fully present as opposed to the item fully present, and so on. So if you can see on that level that there's a lot of very, very fascinating and even cute and adorable interrelationships that bring up things that on the surface don't seem to belong together at all, and yet Lemaisa are very, very interrelated, even including the closing issues of the relationship of Olam HaZeh and Olam Haba. It's exactly the same issue, not fully present. So let's take a look now at the Dafim and go over them quickly one by one. So we started off talking about, we had our Mishnah, of course, on the bottom of Mem Aleph Amud Beis, and we went on to talk about the, on Mem Beis at the bottom, because we had the beginning of Mem Beis Amud Aleph, still linked to previous Perek. So we talked about, even though the Mishnah introduced, of course, the idea of Chametz Nukshe and Tarovis, but on that daf, we only had the things of lousy achilas that are marbim, as hazevel, and so on and so forth. Then on Amud Beis, we went through the details of everything that was in that Mishnah and why it's considered to be not fully present. And each one, there was a slightly different time. So we went through Shechar Amodai and the Chametz Adomi, the Zesem HaMitzri, with the Machlokas of what the ingredients are, the Zoma of Tzavaim, the idea of starches or things that you use to absorb things in a tavshil, and the kolan sofrim and the relationship to wood, to tanning, and so on, tipule nashim, and from there we got a little bit into what type of things are used as depilatories. Okay, then we got into how do we know this extension into Chometz Nukshe. And we started dealing with Si'ur there because we saw Si'ur as a concept of Chametz Nukshe, that is to say that it's not fully there, which is exactly what Si'ur is. It's part of the process, but it's not fully there. And the same thing is true of the overall idea of Chametz Nukshe. It is not fully edible. It's not inedible, so it's not considered to be nifsal, but since it's in the process of becoming chometz, or it's now at the beginning of its chimutz, but it's not really something that's palatable, so we have three different issues. We've got the edible, we've got the inedible, and then we have in the middle, we have the issue of palatability, which again is one of these not fully there expressions. So we first talk about kol machmetzet lo tochelu and the machlokas of kol and ki kol, and then we talk about the kol ochel machmetzet, which has to do with the individual, and that was a question whether that is marba noshim, and if you don't have anything else to be marba, can you utilize a pasuk that's talking about the object to increase the subject or vice versa? We got into a little bit off on a tangent on that. Now, on Mem Dalet, we started talking about these amazing halachas of Hetem et Starif Le'Isser and where they might apply. So we started off with Rabbi Yochanan, the focus specifically on the dinum of Nazir because of the concept of Mishrat. And from there, we went to see that it shayach also to Sa'or Lotakrivu, referring to the Mizbeach. I really should clarify that the Sa'or is not Sa'or that we're talking about here. And in fact, it's possible that we could learn that it was Nogea Chometz B'Pesach. Then we were machalik between Ataruvas, where you have a Kezayis Bichtei Achilas Pras, where over there you have the actual presence, and the machlokas about whether does that apply the same way if it's betaroves as where it's not betaroves, that the shir of achilas achila bichtei achilas pras, or even if it's mixed with other things, it would still be considered to be a full achila bichtei achilas pras. On Memdalad on the base, we went into those who utilize Mishrat to teach me the din of Tam Ke'ikar. Why Tam Ke'ikar is Bekola Torah Kula, and yet when it comes to Atomit Starif La'Isser, nobody was willing to say it was talking about the Kola Torah Kula. And then we looked into the alternatives with Rabbi Akiva, the alternatives to Tam Ke'ikar, which could be Basar B'cholav, or could be the story of Milchemes Midian and Geulei Akum. And that, of course, got us into the question of pots being Tam Ke'ikar, which was Nogea, the idea of No Saint Tam Livgam, which is a special din in terms of the pot, according to the Chomim, E.F. Shadalo, Delo Pogim Purte, and therefore it's considered to be a Chiddush and not a proper Mokar. And then, according to Rabbi Akiva, it turned out that we thought that there was only one case. Turns out that Chatas, in the din of the Beis HaMikdash, Chatas would also be a halakha of the Tam Ke'ikar. And the difference between why we would need a pasuk to tell me that Isser is mitztaref to Isser, where even if Heter would be mitztaref le'Isser, and the question was, is it one achila or is it two separate achilas? And we moved into what happens if you're miyachid the chometz for not chometz purposes. So there too, it's chometz, but it's not fully present as chometz because it's actually looked at as silicon or it's looked at as paper mache and cases like that. Okay, so that started off with the mission about the batseik besitkei ariva. We're over there, we're using it as a waterproofing, even though it may still be edible. And the question was, we had the three different areas of the Areva. Where does it lose its din of chometz entirely? And where is it nogea if it's a kezayis, or if it's less than a kezayis, different ways of understanding that Mishnah about the three different areas. And then we extended that into what the din would be legabe tuma, and what the din would be legabe chibur, what the din would be legabe chatzitza, all based on the concept of something being other than the foodstuff, which it is, because of the way that it was being used. Then we got into the Mishnah about challah, which triggered all discussion about why is it, on Daf Memvav Omid Beis, why is it that we have this Reb Eliezer with lo zeh chometz, that this is not the chometz that you're looking for. No, this is not the chometz that I'm looking for. The chometz was actually a completely different type of chometz. Why is that? And that got us into the question of whether the tovas hana'ah is considered to be momon, or tovas hana'ah is not in the value of the thing itself. And of course, that would be a tremendous nafkamina, because then the fact that it's lo yera elecha, and it has to be dafka yours, and it can't belong to Hagdish or to Kohanim and to somebody else if it isn't your achrayas, then the question of whether I have tovas hana'ah in a thing, which means truma and challah, all cases where I can determine where to give it, if you have tovas hana'ah as mamon, I'm in big trouble, because then I would be responsible for the biur chametz, even on something like that. And that led to a machlokas about what do I do if I have to take off challah from an isa that's tummy and nobody's going to be able to eat it and so on. And that also led to the issue of hoil. And this was a very broad approach initially to oil, that it could actually define who the owner is. Since theoretically I could be shoyal on my neder, so therefore it should be considered perhaps yours. Remember, that was something that Rashi didn't like. In the end, he claimed that he believes it's a actual mistaken girs in the beginning of the sugya. But of course, that served as a beautiful excuse for us to examine the depths of the takana of Eruve Tafshilin. Because the main problem there of Tafshilin is that it sure seems on the surface that there's an Isser D'oraisa to do Melocha on Yontif to prepare for Shabbos. And therefore the question is, what in the world is the meaning of a Heter D'rabbanan on an Isser D'oraisa? So we had two different approaches to that. The big machlokas between Rab and Reb Chista about whether it's predicated on the idea of Hoyel, which is Hoyel if Orchim are going to show up. Therefore, it would be considered to be for Tzorech of Yontif, or whether Lazar of Chista claims, Machlokas precisely how to understand it, but that Shabbos and Yontif are both considered to be the same Tzorech Yontif, according to Rashi, because both are considered to be Yomim of Shabbaton, according to Tosis, because the very fact that the only time that's available to prepare this is on Yontif is additive with the idea that it's Ochel Nefesh. It doesn't mean it has to be Ochel Nefesh for Yontif, and therefore, this is Ochel Nefesh that is meant to be prepared on Yontif is the meaning of Lachem on Yontif. And according to that, you'd be allowed to do it a libet Reb Chista. We still talked about halacha lemaisa dafkamina. So that led us to an understanding also, where is something your responsibility and where it isn't. So we had the question of lachem as a heter. We had it before. We spoke about the question of something that belongs to a goy, belongs to Hekdash. You were talking about something that is being done for goyim on Yontif, something that is being done for Hekdash on Yontif. And that was the machlokas about whether lachem includes both lachem velo la'akum and velo la'hegdash, or it's only lachem velo la'akum. And then we got into a lot of tangential discussions, but really cute discussions about where hoel ought to apply. And in order to see that, we went to a couple of cases where you have multiple chiyuvim on just doing one act. And so one was about the giranasha and eating it. The other one was talking about digging a furrow and how many times you could be chayiv just for digging one furrow. But in both cases, it led us to questions about hoel. And we used it, we tried to use it as rayas against the idea of hoel. And Rabbi ended up substituting other things for our problem case. Then we attempted to use hoel as the basis in the Mishnah properly, of our Mishnah about what the din is of the challah. And that got us into a discussion, bichlal, of where we might see hoel as a machlokas tanoim, which led to this wild discussion of different types of muktza. Might be a d'oraisa. We ended up muktza with avodah zarah in the end, really, which was the idea of the asherah and atzi asherah. Okay, but that was all, as I say, rather tangential. The next thing that we spoke about were things in the process of becoming chametz. That, of course, was the machlokas about Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda about siur. and also led to the possibility of becoming chometz, and therefore to the process of making matzahs, and the 18-minute discovery that we were talking about, and where we have to be makbid on that, where we have to set up an assembly line in order to make sure that we're not going to get into a situation of chimutz by accident. Then we spoke about also, it's not completely here, and that is an Erev Pesach that occurs Erev HaPesach. And the reason that that happens is because the real Erev Pesach was Shabbos. So then you have to treat the things you would do. Some of the things you would do would be on Erev Pesach. And that was the Machlokes about what it is you have to get rid of before. Do you have to get rid of everything? Do you have to get rid of everything besides two seudas? Do you have to get rid of nothing? And you could get rid of it on Yontif. And is there a difference between Truma and between your own things and what you'd have to do Erev Yontif? And that led us to the whole discussion about not quite being there in terms of Liyasid Lavai, the relationship of a Chosin to a Kala during the time of Erisin, which I pointed out related to the idea of eating matzah before its time, which is compared to having a Kala before her time under the Chuppah. Okay, anyway, that was really the full picture of that perek, I think, and it, once you see it like that, you see it's really, really does hold together, and it's very, very sweet. Okay, anyway, now moving on and getting to today's daf, which is daf Nun Aleph, and I think we might as well start from the beginning of Nun Amud Beis once again and remember what we were talking about. So we started off with the Bnei Chozoi, sort of a small town, and they used to have this minig that they were mafrish challah from rice, which was a little bit weird, and they told that to Rabbi Yosef, and Rabbi Yosef said, no, that's no good, not a good minig. I want you to get somebody who's a czar, who's going to eat that right in front of their faces and stick it right in their face. Now that, of course, led to the big issue about the opening mishnah. And we're going to see that the opening mishnah that we had yesterday is really very a very broad topic. And that is, in general, what is our responsibility for minhagim that previous generations took upon themselves? And in fact, the whole perek is going to be dealing with issues of minhagim. They're not necessarily related to Pesach. So here, once again, we're going to be taking the inyanim of Pesach and seeing them, remarkably, as models for the hanhaga of Yisrael across the deiros. Now, you can understand why that would be true, not only in terms of achila, but also in terms of even dinim such as minhagim, because remember, the actual consolidation of the identity of Yisrael in terms of the specific mishpachotehem and the way that Yisrael relates to each other through the Korban Pesach and Bris Milah is all a function of Yetzias Mitzrayim and the Inyanim of Pesach. Because of that, this is very primal and foundational in the way in which we're going to view our interconnections. So we're going to see throughout this parak that we're going to get into the idea of minhagim, which are usually a very local issue. And the question immediately becomes, when you're talking about B'chol Moshvotechem and the other issues of the identity of Pesach, you need to ask yourself, okay, what about a global village? I mean, people travel. People go from one place to another. What is the bearing of local minhagim, or the way that you were raised? What is the bearing on your current location and your perception of reality in terms of community, mishpacha, country, and so on? And this is an ongoing development, and you can understand that, especially today, when the idea of locality is really, it's almost an anachronism, in the sense that, I mean, people that are watching you davening chol while they're davening yontif in Chutz La'aretz, and they know you came from Eretz Yisrael, and there's another 50 people arriving every hour by these aluminum cigar tubes that fly through the air, that's sort of a different kind of situation than being boli de machlokes that used to be. So this becomes an extremely important understanding of the way in which we interrelate with these things. Now, I want to tell you straight off the bat that we're dealing with multiple elements that need to be taken into consideration. And it is not as easy as it looks. Because consider, there are different bases for these minhagim. Some of these minhagim, there may be minhagim even from the Nevi'im, which we know about on Sukkot. There may be minhagim that were created by a Beis Din, and they affect all of Yisrael, or there may be a minhagim that are created by Talmidei Chachamim, who are leaders in a particular community for their community. There may be minhagim that just people took upon themselves, but they are minhagim that make sense. There are minhagim that people take upon themselves, which are mistakes because of the fact that they thought that a halacha was a particular way and they were knowing like a halacha, but the whole assumption was wrong. And there may be minhagim, which they knew perfectly well, were not the halacha, but they took on a chumra on themselves. But it's called a minhag shtus because of the fact that it is going to cause problems rather than solve problems. So those are many, many different levels of minhagim. In those levels, there's also the difference in a very not well-defined concept of what is considered to be a minhag chashuv and what is not a minhag chashuv. That relates to all of these different factors, as Tosis points out. And there's the further question of what is your relationship to that locality on an ongoing basis? Do you plan to go back there? Are you visiting there? Have you come to settle there? Are you in the presence of someone who was aware of a halakha that came from people who are no longer alive, but that he is carrying forward that tradition and you're in his presence? All issues like that interweave with the level of the minhag. And because of that, this is quite a complex perek, although not on the surface, but in trying to come out with an underlying, and many actual books have been written about this topic, gigantic introduction by the Pisrei Tshuva, and so on. So there's a lot of things to discuss. So when we discussed today, we start off with the Bnei Chozai. And these people knew that they're not supposed to be taking challah from rice cakes, but nonetheless, they accepted on themselves this chumrah. Rav Yosef said, go and be mevatel the minhag by doing exactly the opposite right in their face. Now, we're not sure why he felt that was important, or for that matter, why it's even mutter to do that. Because Abaye, of course, immediately asked him yesterday, but didn't the Mishnah say that if something is mutter and other people are knowing, iser, that you're not allowed chas v'shalom to be in their face? And that's exactly what you're doing. So the response of Rav Yosef was that I heard that that was only true if the people that you're dealing with are kutim. And if they're real Jews and they're keeping the halachas and so on, you don't have to worry. You can tell them that this is a mistake or there's a reason why it's a minhag shtus. So Abaye said to him, but the point is, and here's where we're up to, I think, the last word on the second line, kutoy mai tai. Why do you think, I mean, kutim are different? La halacha. I mean, think for a moment. Why are kutim different? Because mishum de mister chemilta. Because since they are not serious contenders for a deeper understanding of what it is that you're telling them, all they know is that, oh my God, they were matirit. Well, if it turns out we're allowed to eat challah, what the heck? Let's eat challah even of the rice. Well, let's eat challah of the grain, right? That's called slippage. So it's a slippery slope, as we say in English. It's exactly what the word Misrachei Milta means. It's slippery slope. So isn't that the problem with the kutim? Well, I mean, so then it has nothing to do with kutim or non-kutim. It has to be with the level of learnedness in the community that you're talking about. I mean, you're talking about Bnei Chozai. So it's exactly the same as the kutim. Hanach inchinami sarchei milta. Same thing will happen over here. Therefore, Rav Ashi says, look, you can't just be mevatel this minhag. You have to see the good and the bad in the minhag. So how would you measure the good and the bad? And we're going to see both what's good about this minhag and what's bad about this minhag. I say, let's look at the situation because there's actually variables here. If most of the people have their entire diet built around rice and they don't eat grains, so this was the first occurrence of the modern anti-wheat movement, you know, so nobody's gonna touch wheat. Chas v'chalila, we can drop dead. Who knows? They started eating rice. Okay, so they only eat rice. So now, if most of the people are like that, So then do not be mavato the minhag. And a zar should not eat it in their faces. Because if you do, then the very point of the minhag, which was, look, in our town, if you don't take off challah from rice, nobody is going to remember that there is even a mitzvah of taking off challah. And when situations change, and then chas v'shalom to eat rice, because now rice will give you cancer, God knows what, the next stages in the diets, so then no one will know that you have to take off challah from grain. So because of that, it was a good idea, this minhag. But if not, then it's a bad idea. And if, in fact, most people do eat grains, then for sure be bevatel the minhag. But now we finally get an understanding of why Rabbi Yosef was so upset with the minhag. It's obviously a horrible minhag, because if you have people taking off challah from rice, then they may think that challah from rice is the full equivalent of challah from grain. And that would be horrible. Why? Because Dilma ati lefrushi min achiyuv al aptur, umin aptur al achiyuv. Because in that case, you may end up people are going to be taking off, some but say they'll take off from rice, they'll take off challah on real grain. If they would do that, then they'd be eating tevel, because it isn't challah at all, because it's pure, it's nonsense. You can't take off from something that is Erez al Dagan, and therefore there was no challah, and anybody who eats that bread is going to be eating tevel. And vice versa. If you use the grain and your mafresh from the grain on the rice, then you're going to be giving that challah, which is pure tevel, because the shame challah was never challah on it. And therefore, because, I mean, you're saying this should be challah on that orez. Orez isn't chayiv in challah. So then you're going to be giving the kohen tevel. So no matter what, it's a bad minhag. And the question is, you need to weigh whatever parts were good about the minhag and how applicable they are against what's liable to be a bad result of the minhag. That's what Rav Ashi points out, which now allows us to see at least one of the factors. As far as the Dvarim HaMutarim, because of something that's a ta'ut. Now, a ta'ut is something entirely different. As Tosis points out, there's places where we have, let's say, remember we had Rebbe being matir, eating tevel in Beit Shan. You know, that's because they mistakenly thought that the border of the Kedushas Haaretz extended at that time, into Beit Shan and so on. All right. That's a mistake. A mistake is a completely different issue. But there's also a difference between something that was nohug in town or nohug hinhig, the chacham of the town, which is not what we're talking about over here. Okay, so now let's go back to the idea. Gufa. Dvarim ha-mutarim v'acherim nahagu b'hem isur, i'ata rashai la'atirim b'fneihem. And Rav Chisda said, but that's only where the people are on a slippery slope. They are kutoi askina, but not normal people. Says the Gemara, not normal people? Kule amalo? I mean, we could see crazy minhagim that people have. And the question was, should you tell them they're nuts or should you just go along? And I'm going to bring you three cases where people had these nutty minhagim and nobody wanted to tell them that they were wrong and they were not kutim. How do you explain that? Kule amalo? Let's take a look at the three cases. Vatanya. Normally, rochatzim shnei achim ke'echad, but ein rochatzim shnei achim bikvul. So there's a town called Kvul. Now, normally, nobody ever heard of there being any kind of problem of going into the same mikveh as your brother. I mean, for heaven's sakes, your brother's no different than anybody else. I mean, if you want to go skinny dipping with a brother, what would be more natural? In Kvul, they never did that. So the reason they never did that in Kvul, we're going to see, is an extension of Harchokam in Harayas. And they held that there would be some level of homosexual attraction between brothers who are always with each other and so on. And therefore, we want to avoid their being naked together. Okay, so in Kvul, they didn't do that. Now, Yehuda and Hillel, the sons of Rebbe Gamliel, and obviously being brothers, they were in Kvul. They had no idea that people in Kvul are so hung up. So they went skinny dipping. They went to the mikveh together. And the whole town was up in arms. I mean, they got the moral police, and they were putting on these gay pride parades. And what's going on over here? These guys are nuts. Whoever heard of such a thing? La Zalim Kolamedina. Everybody's talking about them. Mia Menu Lora Inuka. Whoever heard of such a thing? So anyway, so poor Hillel, one of the brothers, so he said, okay, fine, I'll get out of the mikveh, all right? So he gets out of the mikveh and he goes into the Bayit HaChitzon of the mikveh so that they shouldn't say anything. But he didn't want to say that you're nuts. He never wanted to tell them that there's no basis for this. There's another minhag. And you're certainly allowed to wear slip-ons on Shabbos, but not if you're in the town where Gavi lives. Oh, no. In Gavi town, which is Birya, they don't allow you to wear slip-ons on Shabbos. Why is that? Because they're afraid that slip-ons are slip-offs. And if that slip-off falls off your foot, then you're liable to carry in the Rishus HaRabim. So you can't go out before the Kisun on Shabbos if you're in Biri. Now, again, poor Yehuda and Hillel. These guys always get into trouble. And here they are visiting Gavi for Shabbos. Little do they know that you're not allowed to be wearing these kordekisons. And they go outdoors wearing, and the town goes wild. And there's a mob riot over there. V'loz aleihem ha'medina. Whoever heard of such a thing? Mi'ameinu lo ra'inu kach. So, okay, they took off their kordekisons and they gave it to their avodim. But they didn't want to say, you guys are crazy. What's wrong with wearing these things? Okay. And there's another issue. Are you allowed to sit down on the benches that the Goyish businessmen sit down on when they're selling? And of course, stores open on Shabbos. Can you sit down on the bench? Well, yes, but not if you're in Akko. Oh, no. And poor Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel sat down on these benches in Akko, and they started having these parades against him. Allah Zalim Kol Medina, Mi'ameinu Lora Inukach. So, okay, he pops off of the bench and sits down on the ground, and he refused to tell them that Mutarimatim. So, how do you explain that? These are not Kutoi. Yes, but the idea is that B'nai Medinat Hayam, in places where it's lo shchichi rabbonan gabayu, so they don't really have much learning, they don't have anybody to learn from, and they haven't seen solid learning, and things just sort of get locked into place because of something that happened at one point or another. So because of that, they have the same din as the Kutai. And it's a slippery slope. Okay, now, let's go through these three things. I mean, I understand why you can't sit down on benches of goyim. That's because it looks like maybe you're going to open a store. Okay, I don't know. I mean, somebody wants to think that a rabbi sitting there with his gemara is actually maybe selling gemaras or something. It sounds a little crazy, but I can at least understand why you wouldn't want to be nechshad and mekach u'mekach. I understand why you don't want to wear slip-ons. Because dima mishtafim vasulasino arba amot b'shutarami. But I do not understand this hang-up about brothers skinny dipping. Rochatzim, my time alone. So the truth is that in Kavul, that was based on an extension of an actual existing din. Because we do know that there are cases where we asser you from actually being together in a bath because of the fact that it is gorem to hirhurim. So it causes sexual thoughts. So someone that you have a genital relationship with, so that let's say your father. So, okay, so to go, now again, this is the shita that we have at this point, that the question of we're going to see it's a machlokas, but not going into parental nakedness is a question of hirhur, because since you automatically assume that connection is a genital connection. And because of that, it may lead you to think in terms of genitals. The same thing is true about your father-in-law. Because ultimately, since you sleep with his daughter, so the connection of your wife and him is a genital connection. So again, it leads you to consider aspects of genitalia. The same thing would be true if your mother remarries. So Baal Imo, you just can't help but thinking that this guy is sleeping with your mother. Or Baal Achoto, this guy is sleeping with your sister. So because of that, they extended it to brothers as well. because of Baal Achoto, because you basically understand the interrelationship between you is a genetic interrelationship, and a genetic relationship leads to thinking about the genital relationship, and because of that, it could lead to a sexual connection. Okay, so they want it to be gozer b'shnei achim. Now, what's interesting is that Rabbi Yehuda was matir ba'aviv mipnei kvod aviv. He said you are allowed to be mishamesh your father. So if your father needs to be helped in the bath, carry in his towels or scrub his back or whatever it is, that there would be no iser. Mashma, according to the Chachomim, there is an iser. Based on that, we understand that Rashi's approach originally, that the reason for the iser of being naked with parental nakedness is because of Hirhurim, that would not be mutter for Kvod Aviv. So apparently Reb Yehuda disagrees with that, and he says that the reason that you're not supposed to be with your father if the father is naked is because it's not kavod, because since you're mechuyev to have a sense of awe for him, so then you don't go into an area. Remember, begodim have the word kavod. Rabbi Yochanan used to call his begodim kavod. So when a person is not stripped of begodim, they're in a matzav of greater kavod. So the reason that you would not be with your parents or your father if he's undressed is because it isn't kavod. But then if the point is to be mechabed the father, so then it would be mutter. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Rashi that defines the reason for aviv as being a question of sexual thinking is certainly not true. That's the point. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's a din in kavod aviv, and according to the Chachamim, it's a din along with the other things that are usher because of yirut. And that is an important machlokas, which is how we paskin, that you are actually roichets mishum kavod aviv. And the same thing would be true about Baal Imo. The Atu Inu, that's really didn't kavod according to Rabbi Yehuda. Now they came along and they were gozer shnei achim, because they say, look, if you're going to look at a brother-in-law, Baal Achoto, then we have to extend that to look at a brother. Brother and brother-in-laws are very similar. So because of that, he wasn't matir to them. Now, we extend this into a din of kavod rabo. So lo yirchatz im rabo. So therefore, unless it's in order to be mechabed rabo im rabo tzarich lo, so then mutar, the same way that Reb Yehuda holds about the father. And over here, everybody agrees that it's a din in kavod. Ki osa rabo bar bachana, ochel de'aitra. So now there was, remember we had the machlokas in Chulin about which fats of a chometz, which fats of a stomach are considered to be chelev and which are considered to be shumat. So it was a big machlokas about, remember the shape of a stomach is similar to a bow. It's a sort of bow shaped, as all of you are aware. And so one side of the stomach is more flat than the other. So the more bow-shaped side of the stomach is called the bow, the keshet. And the flat side is called the string, the yeter. And the fat that is on the yeter in Eretz Yisrael, they would eat, and in Bavel, they would not eat. And in Aramaic, the yeter was called the aitra. And Rabbi Barbachano, who came from Eretz Yisrael, he ate the Aitra, and he was visiting in Bavel, and he was eating the Aitra, and Rav Avira Saba and Rabba Breder of Huna come in to visit him, and when he sees them, he takes something and he covers over the Aitra so that they shouldn't see him eating it. So they noticed, and they came and they told Abaye, he covered over the Aitra. So the Abaye said to him, well, apparently he thinks you're the same as the Kutim. Maybe because he didn't want you to know that in his opinion it's mutter because he thinks you guys are not much better than Kutim. I mean, I don't know why he would care to show you that he eats the Aitra and he would think that because of that, what, you would come to eat something that was ulcer to you? I mean, I don't know. Boy, oh boy. Now, the truth is, of course, the problem is, doesn't Rabbi Barbachana hold of the Mishnah? The Mishnah says that if you move from one locale to another, it says, Notnim alav chumrei ha-makom sheyatza misham, v'chumrei ha-makom she'alach l'sham. Says Abaya, there's another consideration over here. The other consideration is the interrelationship of the two places. Now, look, I mean, if you're talking about moving between two cities in Bavel or moving between two cities in Eretz Yisrael, then the overall definition of your minhag remains the same, and you have to go ahead and you have to be mechabed the minhagim in the other place. You're not allowed to be mishaneh. And even if you're going from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. But if you're coming from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, you do not cancel your minhag just because of Bavel. Because since we here in Bavel are dependent in the piskei halachas of people from Eretz Yisrael, because after all, they are smuchim and we are not. Furthermore, as Tosis points out, Avira de Eretz Yisrael is machkim, and therefore the approach to Torah in Eretz Yisrael is far more real and therefore reliable than it is in Chutz La'aretz. Because of that, we are not going to be mevatel a minhag in Eretz Yisrael because of the kavod of Bavel. So therefore, he went ahead and he continued, Rabbi Bar Bar Chana, to eat in Bavel the Aisera. As far as why he didn't show it to you, I mean, he doesn't know. He thinks, you know, yeah. I mean, he didn't realize you were coming as Tabid HaChachamim to learn from him. And so he didn't want to expose it, that's all. Rav Ashi Amar, Rav Ashi says, even if we're talking about from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, it would depend on whether you are coming as a visitor or whether you're coming as a permanent resident. So, you would still have to be machmir if you were planning on staying in Bavel. But Rabbi Bar Bar Chana only came as a visitor, and therefore he would not have to pay any attention to the minhag in the place that he came to. The only thing is that he wasn't allowed to, if you are kutoi, he wasn't allowed to show you because of the slippery slope problem or the machlokas problem. Okay. Omer le Rabbi Bar Bar Chana livane. So Rabbi Bar Bar Chana told his children, Bonai, lo tochal. So to his son, he said, Bini, lo tochal, lo bifanai, lo shalo bifanai. Now this is because his son had moved to Bavel. He was visiting his son. So he told his son, you do not have the right to eat the Aitra now that you've moved to Bavel, even in front of me. Some Rishonim learn in front of me means during my lifetime. But others learn it means kipshuta, that you're with me. So because, I'll tell you, personally, I would not have the guts to be matir the Aisera. I don't consider myself to be such a bucky in the dinim of chelev that I would be able to tell you that it's mutter. The reason that I eat the Aitera is because I watched Rabbi Yochanan eating the Aitera. And for me, that's a good enough psak. And therefore, I can rely on that, whether I'm with him or I'm not with him. Kedayu Rabbi Yochanan lismoch alav bifanav v'shalo bifanav. However, you did not see Rabbi Yochanan, and you cannot rely on my seeing Rabbi Yochanan. And therefore, you being here are basically a ben bavel, and you cannot eat it at all. Lo tochal ben bifanai ben shalo bifanai, which seems to be a contradiction of his own words in a different situation, because the same Rabbi Bar Bar Chana tells over how Rabbi Yochanan ben Elazar points out that he once walked with Rabbi Shimon ben Rabbi Yossi ben Lekunya into a garden, and what Rabbi Shimon did is he took some svichei kruv and he ate it, and he gave me and he said, you can eat it with me. Bini, b'fanai achol, l'shalo b'fanai lo tochal. Now, before we get into the sugya, I must give you some background. There's a tremendous machlokas here between Rashi and Tosfos, which all the Rishonim get involved in, into what the meaning of the Isser of Svichim is. Svichim refers to things that have grown up on their own during Shemitah. And the question is whether are those things usher to eat even though nobody planted them, because of the fact that, well, it's not sure what because of the fact is. It might be a drabbanan iser extension that people will come to collect regular things that were planted in Shvias, or it could be that there is, as we'll see, a mocker in the posik alibid Rabbi Akiva to aser svichin. However, Rashi learns that the svichim that we're talking about is not the iser svichim per se, that something grew on its own. It means the iser svichim after the zman of the biur. That's the point. So after the Zman of the Biur is because we know that you're not allowed, we spoke about this many times, Kola Lechaya Min HaSadeh, then it's Kola LeBehemtecha Min HaBayit. Because that's why the Torah puts together for Behemtecha and Chayat HaSadeh. After the time that this is no longer left in the field, at that point, it becomes usur for you to keep it home. And what do you do with it? Again, another machlokas within a machlokas. What does biur consist of? Does biur consist of the actual destruction of the product? Or does biur consist of taking it out of your house and being mafkir it for whoever wants it? And then at that point, you can go back and take it and bring it back in into your house. And that's the Kedusha Shvius kind of things that you see sometimes that are going to be problematic if it's after the Zman HaBiur, unless you see that it says on it that Biur was done to it, relying on those shitas that it was, this is all coming up next year. So you might as well get your mind around it. And that would be the approach to the Svichim that we're talking about over here, Aliba to Rashi. Rashi says that the reason that Sviche Kruv are different is because Kruv never disappears from the field. There's always a solid piece of cabbage that keeps putting out new cabbage heads, but the edible root of the cabbage is still there, and the stalk of the cabbage is still there. The chaya never runs out of cabbage. So because of that, Rabbi Shimon was matir the cabbage in terms of svichin. Tosfos learns that svichin is a completely different issue. It has to do with anything that grew up. It has nothing to do with the Zman HaBiur. It's talking about before the Zman HaBiur. And the issue over here is during Shemitah before the Zman HaBiur, as we're going to see from Rabbi Akiva. And the question over here is on things that cannot grow up on their own unless they're there all the time from before, whether there's also a din of svichin or not, or only things that actually grow from seeds that could have grown up on their own and other issues. In any event, that's that some of that, a little tiny bit of that background, which is the question of what svichin is and its relationship to biur. So the question over here is, did I have a right to eat this? So I'm telling you, in front of me, you can re-eat it. Why? Because I saw Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai eating it. And I'm telling you that Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai is kedai to be soymech alav, whether he's around or not. But you can only be soymech on it in front of me. So in this case, of course, we didn't have the additional problematic issue of being in a mokum that had a different minag and so on. So it appears to be a stira, but there are reasons for the difference. Anyway, what is the story of Rabbi Shimon? Where does it say that Rabbi Shimon was matir svichei kruv? Well, the Tanya, actually, it's pretty clear where. As a matter of fact, it might even be the Tanan. Because the Mishnah seems to says this. Actually, the Mishnah says the exact opposite, but where does this worries about that? So Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai says that actually, kol ha-svichim asurim chutz mi-svichei kruv, because there's nothing like svichei kruv in any other of the Yerakot HaSadeh. It grows entirely differently, and nobody's going to come to be matir one from the others. V'chachomim omrim, all svichim are the same, both of them following the sheet of Rabbi Akiva, who asr svichim. What is the mark of Rabbi Akiva's iser on svichim? It's the lashon of the pasuk. If the pasuk says, it says, v'chi tomru, ma nochal bashana hashevi'it. Listen to this weird pasuk. What are we supposed to be eating if hein lo nizra, if we're not going to be planting anything, v'lo ne'esof et tfuatenu, we're not going to be gathering our tfua. I mean, isn't it pretty obvious that if you didn't plant anything, you've got nothing to eat? Why are you adding the ridiculous, redundant words, we're not going to be gathering our tfua? What tfua? You didn't plant any tfua. Therefore, says Rabbi Akiva, obviously there's two completely different levels to this pasuk. We're not going to be planting, so we're not going to have normal crops. And even the things that grow up on their own are not going to be asifad by us because you said we're not supposed to. That's a reference to the Svichim. So, v'chim yachash ein zorim, if you're not going to plant, where in the world would you be osvim? Unless Svichim are asurim. So the machlokas is, the rabbonin are going to be gozer svichei kruv, because if you allow svichei kruv, people will think all svichen are mutter. And Rabbi Shimon says, lo gazvin svichei kruv, oto svichei di alma. And, continues the Mishnah, if you're going from a place where we do not do to a place where you do do, or this is back at our Mishnah about Malacha on Erev Pesach, or if you go from a place where they don't do work to a place where they do do work, then we give him the chumras of the place that he's going to. Now, hold on a sec over here. I understand. If you're going from a makom that they do do work to a place where they don't do work, then it's telling you you have to keep their chumra and do not do work. Because if you do work over there, people will go crazy the way they did with all the three stories that we had before. And therefore, lo la'aveh, don't work. But I don't understand the other implication. You're going from a place where they do not do work, and you're not allowed to do work. And then you're going to a place where they do do work. So you're telling me that I have to do work because don't change because of the machloket? But you said from the other half of your mouth that you're not allowed to change your minhag, and my minhag is that I'm not allowed to do work. So how can you tell me to yes, do work? This doesn't make any sense. No matter what I do, I'm damned if I do, I'm damned if I don't. So how does the Mishnah make sense over there? I can't do work if I said I'm not going to do work. So what does it mean to say, Al Yishanem Ipnei HaMachloket, and I should do work? V'na'ave, didn't you just say, Notnim Alav Chumrei HaMokam Sha'alak L'Sham V'Chumrei HaMokam Sheyatzah Misham? And in the place that I left, I was not allowed to do work. What are you saying? Says, I mean, use your brains. I mean, obviously, the Mishnah is not telling you to do that. The part about doing what you got to do is only if it would not violate what it is that you have in your makom. So it's only referring to the first case. Rav Amar says, no. Okay, the Mishnah doesn't say something like that, talk about both directions, and then only refer to the first case. The Mishnah is talking about both cases. The point that the Mishnah is making by adding the words al yishaneh mipnei hamachloket is to say, and don't worry about not doing work in the place where they do work, because the only reason was because of machloket. And v'achikomer ein bezo mipnei shinui machloket. Since the only problem of machloket is where people are going to get upset at the fact that you're holier than thou, and that is what people can't take, people that have chumras, oh my God. So over there, you have to worry. But in this case, what do you think they're going to say? Oh, look at Mr. Holier Than Thou. He doesn't do any work in the morning of Pesach, Erev Pesach, Chas V'Shalom. We're not good enough for him. That's not what they're going to say. They're going to say, look at Mr. Lazy Bones. The guy's got nothing to do with his life. That's what they're going to say. So why would they be machlokasin on that? Haro'eh Omer, Micah Amrit, Haro'eh Omer. What do you think? That the guy is going to look and he say, oh, this guy holds a malacha is asur? Nah. Meimer Amri, he's going to say to himself, look at that. Kama batlani havi b'shuka. There's all kinds of lazy bones all over the place, sitting around doing nothing all year round. We needed visitors to do nothing. Anyway, but that's not included in the Al Yishaneh.